Chapter 14. Wet Things. Inside, the gilded stand lamps were lit, since daylight never penetrated far into the palace, flames flickering on the lamps that lacked glass mantles. The lamps' mirrors provided a good light in the bustling corridor, though, and bustling it was, with liveried servants scurrying in every direction, or sweeping, or mopping. Serving men with the white line on the left breast of their red coats were up on tall ladders taking down the winter tapestries, mainly flowers and scenes of summer, and putting up the spring tapestries, many displaying the colorful foliage of fall. Always two seasons ahead, for the majority of the hangings was the custom, to provide a touch of relief from winter's cold or summer's heat, to remind while spring's new growth was on all the trees that the branches would grow bare and the snows come again. To remind when dead leaves were falling and the first snows, too, and days grew ever colder, that there would be a spring. There were a few battles among them, showing days of particular glory for Andor, but Elaine did not enjoy looking at those as much as she had as a girl. Still, they had their place now as well, tokens of what battle actually was. The difference between how a child looked at things and a woman did. Glory was always bought with blood. Glory aside, necessary things were often paid for with battle and blood. There were too few servants to carry out such tasks in a timely manner, and a fair number were white-haired pensioners with bent backs who seldom moved quickly in any case. However slow they were, she was glad they had willingly come out of retirement to train those newly hired and take up the slack left by those who had fled while Gabriel reigned, or after Rand took Caemlyn. Else the palace would have taken on the aspect of a barn by this time, a dirty barn. At least all of the winter runners were up off the floors. She left a damp trail behind her on the red and white floor tiles, and with all the spring rains, wet runners would have been sprouting mildew before nightfall. Servants in red and white, hurrying about their duties, looked aghast as they bowed or curtsied, which did nothing for her temper. They did not appear upset to see Avienda or Birgitta drenched and dripping, or the guardswomen either. Burn her if everyone did not stop expecting her to be mollycoddled all the day long. Her scowl was such that the servants began making their courtesies quickly and scurrying on. Her temper was becoming the stuff of evening stories in front of the fireplace, though she tried not to unleash it on servants. On anyone, really, but more so with servants. They lacked the luxury of shouting back. She intended to go straight to her apartments and change, but intentions or no, she turned aside when she saw Rhianna Corley walking in a crossing corridor where the floor tiles were all red. The servants' reactions had nothing to do with it. She was not being stubborn. She was wet, and she wanted dry clothing and a warm towel in the worst way. But seeing the kinswoman was a surprise, and the two women with Rhianna also caught her eye. Birgitta muttered a curse before following her, swishing her bowstave sideways through the air as though thinking of striking someone. The bond carried a blend of long-suffering and irritability, soon stifled. Avienda never left Elaine's side, though busily trying to wring water out of her shawl. Despite all the rain she had seen, all the rivers since crossing the spine of the world and the great cisterns beneath the city, Avienda winced at the waste, the water splashing uselessly on the floor. The eight guardswomen, left behind by her sudden swerve, hurried to catch up, stolid and silent except for the stamp of their boots on the floor tiles. Give anyone a sword and boots, and they began stamping. One of the women with Rhianna was Cara Dufane, who had been the wise woman or healer of a fishing village on Toman Head before the Shanshan collared her. Plump and merry-eyed in brown wool with embroidered blue and white flowers at her cuffs, Cara appeared little older than Elaine, though she was nearly 50. The other was named Jalari, a former Damani from Shanshan. Despite everything, the sight of her made Elaine's flesh feel cold. Whatever else could be said of her, the woman was Shanshan after all. Not even Jalari herself knew how old she was, though she appeared just into her middle years. Slight of build, with long, fiery red hair and eyes as green as Avienda's, she and Marilla, the other Shanshan-born Damani who remained in the palace, persisted in maintaining that they still were Damani, that they needed to be collared because of what they could do. Daily walks were one way the kin were trying to accustom them to freedom. Carefully supervised walks, of course. They were always closely watched, day and night. Either might try to free the Suldam otherwise. For that matter, Kara herself was not trusted alone with any of the Suldam. Nor was Lamour, a young Tarabonner noble, collared when Chanchico fell. The notion would not come to them on its own, yet there was no saying what either would do if a Suldam ordered her to help the woman escape. The habit of obedience remained strong in Kara and Lamour both. Jalari's eyes widened at the sight of Elaine, and she immediately fell to her knees with a thud. She tried to fold herself into a bundle on the floor, but Kara caught her shoulders and gently urged her back to her feet. Elaine tried not to let her distaste show, and hoped that if it did, everyone would take it for the kneeling and crouching. Some of it was. How could anyone want to be collared? She heard Linny's voice again and shivered. You can't know another woman's reasons until you've worn her dress for a year. Burn her if she had any desire to do that. No need for all that, Kara said. This is what we do. She curtsied, not very gracefully. She had never seen a town larger than a few hundred people before the Shonchan took her. After a moment, the red-haired woman spread her own dark blue skirts more awkwardly still. She almost fell over, in fact, and blushed a bright crimson. Jalari, sorry, she almost whispered, folding her hands at her waist. Her eyes she kept meekly directed at the floor. Jalari will try to remember. I, Kara said. Remember what I told you? I call you Jalari, but you call yourself I, or me. Try it, and look at me. You can do it. She sounded as though she were encouraging a child. The Shonchan woman wet her lips, giving Kara a sidelong look.
Aye,
she said softly, and promptly began weeping, tears rolling down her cheeks faster than she could wipe them away with her fingers. Kara enveloped her in a hug and made soothing noises. She seemed about to cry too. Avienda shifted uncomfortably. It was not the tears. Men or women, Aiel wept unashamed when they felt the need, but for them touching hands was a great display in public. Why don't you two walk on alone for a while? Rihanna told the pair with a comforting smile that deepened the fine lines at the corners of her blue eyes. Her voice was high and lovely, suitable for singing. I'll catch you up, and we can eat together. They offered her curtsies too, Jalari still weeping, and turned away with Kara's arm around the smaller woman's shoulders. If you care to, my lady, Rihanna said before they had gone two steps, we could talk on the way to your apartments. The woman's face was calm, and her tone put no special freight on the words, yet Elaine's jaw tightened. She forced it to relax. There was no point in being stubborn, stupid. She was wet, and beginning to shiver, though the day could hardly be called cold. An excellent suggestion, she said, gathering her sodden gray skirts. Come. We could walk a little faster, Birgitta muttered, not quite far enough under her breath. We could run, Avienda said, without trying to keep her voice low at all. We might get dry from the exertion. Elaine ignored them and glided at a suitable pace. In her mother it would have been called regal. She was not sure she managed that, but she was not about to run through the palace, or even hurry. The sight of her rushing would start a dozen rumors, if not 100, each one of some dire event worse than the one before. Too many rumors floated on every breath of air as it was. The worst was that the city was about to fall, that she planned to flee before it did. No, she would be seen to be utterly unruffled. Everyone had to believe her completely confident, even if that was a false facade. Anything else, and she might as well yield to Aramilla. Fear of defeat had lost as many battles as weakness had, and she could not afford to lose a single one. I thought the Captain General had you out scouting, Rihanna. Birgitta had been using two of the kin for scouts, women who could not make a gateway large enough to admit a horse cart, but with circles of kinswomen available to make gateways, for trade as well as moving soldiers, she had co-opted the remaining six who could travel on their own. An encircling army was no impediment to them. Yet Rihanna's well-cut, fine blue wool, though unadorned save for a red enameled circle pin on the high neck, was decidedly unsuited for skulking about the countryside. The Captain General believes her scouts need rest. Unlike herself, Rihanna added blandly, raising an eyebrow at Birgitta. The bond carried a brief flash of annoyance. Avienda laughed for some reason. Elaine still did not understand Aiel humor. Tomorrow I go out again. It takes me back to the days long ago when I was a pack peddler with one mule. The kin all followed many crafts during their long lives, always changing location and craft before anyone took note of how slowly they aged. The oldest among them had mastered half a dozen crafts or more, shifting from one to another easily. I decided to use my free day helping Jellari settle on a surname, Rihanna grimaced. It's custom in Shan Chan to strike a girl's name from her family's rolls when she's collared, and the poor woman feels she has no right to the name she was born with. Jellari was given with the collar, but she wants to keep that.
There are more reasons to hate the Shan Chan than I can count, Elaine said heatedly.
Then, belatedly, she caught up to the import of it all. Learning to curtsy. Choosing a surname. Burn her if pregnancy was making her slow-witted on top of everything else. When did Jellari change her mind about the collar? There was no reason to let everyone know she was being dense today. The other woman's expression did not alter a whit, but she hesitated just long enough to let Elaine know her deception had failed.
Just this morning, after you and the Captain General left, or you'd have been informed.
Rihanna hurried on, so the point had no time to fester.
And there's other news as good, at least it's somewhat good. One of the Suldam, Marley Neuchen, you recall her, has admitted seeing the weaves.
Oh, that is good news, Elaine murmured. Very good. 28 more to go, but they might be easier now that one of them is broken. She had watched an attempt to convince Marley that she could learn to channel, that she could already see weaves of the power. The plump Shan Chan woman had been stubbornly defiant even after she began crying.
Somewhat good, I said, Rihanna sighed. In Marley's opinion, she might as well have admitted she kills children. Now she insists that she must be collared. She begs for the Eidam. It makes my skin creep. I don't know what to do with her.
Send her back to the Shan Chan as soon as we can, Elaine replied.
Rihanna stopped dead in shock, her eyebrows climbing. Birgitta cleared her throat loudly. Impatience filled the bond before being stifled, and the kinswoman gave a start, then began walking again at a faster pace than before. But they'll make her a Damani. I can't condemn any woman to that.
Elaine gave her warder a look that slid off like a dagger sliding off good armor. Birgitta's expression was bland. To the golden-haired woman, being a warder contained strong elements of older sister, and worse, sometimes mother. I can, she said emphatically, lengthening her own stride. Well, it would not hurt to get dry a little sooner rather than later. She helped hold enough others prisoner that she deserves a taste of it herself, Rihanna. But that's not why I mean to send her back. If any of the others wants to stay and learn and make up for what she's done, I certainly won't hand her to the Shan Chan. But light's truth, I hope they all feel like Marley. They'll put an Eidam on her, Rihanna, but they won't be able to keep secret who she was. Every one-time Suldam I can send the Shan Chan to collar will be a mattock digging at their roots.
A harsh decision, Rihanna said sadly.
She plucked at her skirts in an agitated manner, smoothed them, then plucked at them again.
Perhaps you might consider thinking on it for a few days. Surely it isn't anything that has to be done immediately.
Elaine gritted her teeth. The woman had as much as implied that she had reached this decision in one of her swinging moods. But had she? It seemed reasonable and logical. They could not keep the Suldam imprisoned forever. Sending those who did not want to be free back to the Shan Chan was a way to be rid of them and strike a blow at the Shan Chan at the same time. It was more than hatred of any Shan Chan. Of course it was. Burn her, but she bloody well hated being unsure whether her own decisions were sound. She could not afford to make unsound decisions. Still, there was no hurry.
Better to send back a group, if possible, in any event. There was less chance of someone arranging an accident that way. She did not put that sort of thing past the Shan-Chan. I will think on it, Rihanna, but I doubt I'll change my mind. Rihanna sighed again, deeply. Eager for her promised return to the White Tower and Novice White, she had been heard to say she envied Christian and Zarya. She wanted very much to enter the Green Aja, but Elaine had her doubts. Rihanna was kind-hearted, soft-hearted, in fact, and Elaine had never met any Green who could be called soft. Even those who seemed frilly or frail on the surface were cold steel inside. Ahead of them, Van Deen glided from a crossing corridor, slender, white-haired, and graceful in dark gray wool with deep brown trim, and turned in the same direction they were going, apparently without noticing them. She was green and as hard as a hammerhead. Jame, her warder, walked beside her, head bent in close conversation, now and then raking a hand through his thinning gray hair. Gnarled and lean, his dark green coat hanging loose on him, he was old, but every scrap as hard as she, an old root that could dull axes. Kirstian and Zarya, both in plain novice white, followed meekly with their hands folded at their waists, the one pale as a Kyrianan, the other short and slim-hipped. For runaways who had succeeded in what so few did, remaining free of the White Tower for years, over 300 years in Kirstian's case, they had resettled into their places as novices with remarkable ease. But then the kin's rule was a blending of the rules that governed novices and those that accepted lived by. Perhaps, to them, the white woolen dresses and the loss of freedom to come and go as they chose were the only real change, though the kin regulated that last to some extent. "I'm very glad she has those two to occupy her," Rihanna murmured in tones of sympathy. Pained caring shone in her eyes. "It's good that she mourns her sister, but I fear she'd be obsessed with Adelius's death without Christian and Zarya. She may be anyway. I believe that dress she's wearing belonged to Adelius. I've tried offering solace. I have experience helping people overcome grief. I've been a village wise woman as well as wearing the red belt in Ebudar many years ago, but she won't give me two words." In fact, Van Deen wore only her dead sister's clothing now, and Adelius's flowery perfume as well. At times Elaine thought Van Deen was trying to become Adelius, to offer up herself in order to bring her sister back to life. But could you fault someone for being obsessed with finding who had murdered her sister? Not that more than a handful of people knew that was what she was doing. Everyone else believed, as Rihanna did, that she was absorbed with teaching Christian and Zarya. That and beginning their punishment for running away. Van Deen was doing both, of course, and with a will, yet it was really just a cover for her true purpose. Elaine reached out without looking and found Avienda's hand waiting to take hers, a comforting grip. She squeezed back, unable to imagine the grief of losing Avienda. They shared a quick glance, and Avienda's eyes mirrored her own feelings. Had she really once thought Aiel faces impassive and unreadable? "As you say, Rihanna, she has Christian and Zarya to occupy her." Rihanna was not among the handful who knew the truth. "We all mourn in our own way. Van Deen will find solace along her own path. When she found Adelius's murderer, it was to be hoped. If that failed to at least begin assuaging the pain, well, that was to be faced when it must be. For now, she must allow Van Deen her head, especially since she had no doubt the Green would ignore any attempt to rein her in. That was more than irritating. It was infuriating. She had to watch Van Deen perhaps destroying herself, and worse, make use of it. Having no alternative made that no less unpalatable. As Van Deen and her companions turned aside down another hallway, Rena Harfour appeared out of a side corridor right in front of Elaine. A stout, quiet woman with a graying bun atop her head, and an air of regal dignity. Her formal scarlet tabard with the white line of Andor is always looking freshly ironed. Elaine had never seen her with a hair out of place, or looking even slightly the worse for a long day spent overseeing the workings of the palace, and more besides. Her round face appeared puzzled for some reason, but it took on a look of concern at the sight of Elaine. "Why, my lady, you're drenched," she said, sounding shocked as she made her curtsy. "You need to get out of those wet things right away."
"Thank you, Mistress Harfour," Elaine said through her teeth. "I hadn't noticed."
She regretted the outburst instantly. The first maid had been as faithful to her as to her mother. But what made matters worse was that Mistress Harfour took her flare-up in stride, never so much as blinking. Elaine Trecan's moods were no longer anything to be surprised at.
"I will walk with you, if I may, my lady," she said calmly, falling in at Elaine's side.
A freckled young serving woman carrying a basket of folded bed linens began to offer her courtesies, only a hair more directed at Elaine than the first maid, but Rena made a quick gesture that sent the girl scurrying before she completed bending her knees. Perhaps it was just to keep her from overhearing. Rena did not stop talking.
"Three of the mercenary captains are demanding to meet with you. I put them in the blue reception room and told the servants to keep watch, so no small valuables accidentally fall into their pockets. Not that I had to, as it turned out. Kariana Sedai and Saritha Sedai appeared soon after and settled in to keep the captains company. Captain Mellar is with them, too."
Elaine frowned. Mellar. She was trying to keep him too busy for mischief, yet he had a way of turning up where and when she least wanted him. For that matter, so did Kariana and Saritha. One of them had to be the Black Ajah killer. Unless it was Marilla, and she was beyond reach, it seemed. Rena knew about that. Keeping her in the dark would have been criminal. She had eyes everywhere, and they might notice a vital clue.
"What do the mercenaries want, Mistress Harfour?"
"More money is my guess," Birgitta growled, and swung her unstrung bow like a club.
"Most likely," Rena agreed, "but they refused to tell me."
Her mouth tightened slightly. No more than that, yet it seemed these mercenaries had managed to offend her.
If they were stupid enough not to see that she was more than a superior serving woman, then they were very dense indeed.
"Has Dialin returned?" Elaine asked, and when the first maid said not, added, "Then I will see these mercenaries as soon as I've changed clothes. She might as well get them out of the way."
Rounding a corner, she found herself face to face with two of the Windfinders and barely suppressed a sigh. The sea folk were the last people on earth she wanted to confront right then. Lean and dark and barefoot in red brocaded silk trousers and a blue brocaded silk blouse with a green sash tied in an elaborate knot, Chaneladin Saren White Shark was aptly named. Elaine had no idea what a white shark looked like. It might well have been a little thing. But Chanella's big eyes were hard enough to belong on a fierce predator, especially when she took in Avienda. There was bad blood there. A tattooed hand raised the gold piercework scent box hanging on a chain about Chanella's neck, and she inhaled the sharp, spicy scent deeply, as though covering some foul odor. Avienda laughed out loud, which made Chanella's full lips grow thin. Thinner, at least. Thin was beyond them. The other was Renila Din Kellen, once Windfinder to the Mistress of the Ships, in blue linen trousers and a red blouse slashed with blue, tied in a much less intricate knot. Both women wore the long white mourning stoles for Nesta Din Rias, yet Renila must have felt Nesta's death most keenly. She was carrying a carved wooden writing box with a capped ink jar set in one corner and a sheet of paper with a few scrawled lines clipped to its top. Wings of white in her black hair hid the 6 gold earrings in her ears, much thinner rings than the 8 she had worn before learning of Nesta's fate. And the gold honor chain crossing her dark left cheek looked stark, supporting only the medallion that named her clan. After seafolk custom, Nesta's death had meant starting over for Renila, with no more rank than a woman raised from apprentice on the day she herself had put off her honors. Her face still held dignity, though much subdued now that she was acting as Chanella's secretary.
"I'm on my way," Elaine began, but Chanella cut her off imperiously. "What news do you have of Talan and of Marilla? Are you even trying to find them?"
Elaine took a deep breath. Shouting at Chanella never did any good. The woman was more than willing to shout back, and seldom willing to listen to reason. She would not engage in another screaming match. Servants slipping by to either side did not pause to offer bows or curtsies. They could sense the mood here. But they shot grim looks at the seafolk women. That was pleasing, though it should not have been. However upsetting they were, the Windfinders were guests.
In a way, they were. Bargain or no bargain. Shanella had complained more than once of slow-footed servants and tepid bathwater, and that was pleasing, too. Still, she would maintain her dignity and civility. "The news is the same as yesterday," she replied in tones of moderation. Well, she attempted tones of moderation. If traces of sharpness remained, the windfinder would have to live with them. "The same as last week and the week before that. Inquiries have been made at every inn in Camelin. Your apprentice is not to be found. Marilla is not to be found. It seems they must have managed to leave the city." The gate guards had been warned to watch for a sea folk woman with tattooed hands, but they would not have tried to stop an Aes Sedai leaving or taking anyone with her that she wanted. For that matter, the mercenaries would let anyone at all pass who offered a few coins. "And now, if you will excuse me, I am on my way." "That is not good enough!" Shanella's voice was hot enough to singe leather. "You Aes Sedai stick together as tightly as oysters. Marilla kidnapped Talan, and I think you are hiding her. We will search for them, and I assure you when we find them, Marilla will be punished sharply before she is sent to the ships to fulfill her part of the bargain."
"You seem to be forgetting yourself,"
Birgitta said. Her voice was mild, her face calm, but the bond quivered with anger. She held her bowstave propped in front of her with both hands as if to keep them from making fists.
"You'll withdraw your accusations, or you'll suffer for it."
Perhaps she was not as self-controlled as she seemed. This was no way to go on with windfinders. They were women of power among their own people and accustomed to wielding it. But Birgitta did not hesitate.
"By the bargain Zaida made, you're under the Lady Elaine's authority. You're under my authority. Any searching you do will be when you aren't needed. And unless I misremember badly, you're supposed to be in Tyr right now to bring back wagon loads of grain and salt beef. I strongly suggest you travel there immediately, or you might learn a little about punishment yourself."
Oh, that was entirely the wrong way with windfinders.
"No," Elaine said, as hotly as Shanella, surprising herself. "Search, if you wish, Shanella. You and all of the windfinders. Search Camelin from end to end. And when you can't find Talan or Marilla, you will apologize for calling me a liar."
Well, the woman had. As good as, anyway. She felt a strong desire to slap Shanella. She wanted to light. Her anger and Birgitta's were feeding one another. Frantically, she tried to soothe her fury before it burst into open rage, but the only result was a sudden longing to weep that she had to fight just as wildly.
Shanella drew herself up, scowling. "You would claim we had reneged on the bargain. We have labored like bilge girls this past month and more. You will not cast us off without meeting your side of the bargain. Renila, the Aes Sedai at the Silver Swan are to be told, mind, that they must produce Marilla and Talan or else pay what the White Tower owes themselves. They cannot pay all, but they can make a start."
Renila began unscrewing the silver cap of the ink jar.
"Not a note," Shanella snapped. "Go yourself and tell them, now."
Tightening the cap, Renila bowed almost parallel to the floor, quickly touching fingertips to her heart.
"As you command," she murmured, her face a dark mask.
She did not delay in obeying, setting out at a trot the way she had come with the writing box tucked under her arm. Still fighting the desire to strike Shanella and weep at the same time, Elaine winced. This was not the first time the sea folk had gone to the Silver Swan, nor even the second or third, but always before they had gone asking, not demanding. There were 9 sisters resident at the inn at present. The number kept changing as sisters entered the city or left, and rumor said there were other Aes Sedai in the city, too, and it worried her that none had appeared at the palace. She had stayed clear of the Swan. She knew how much Elaida wanted to lay hands on her, but not who the sisters at the Swan supported, or whether they supported anyone. They had been close-mouthed as mussels with Saritha and Kariana, yet she had expected some of them to come to the palace if only to learn what was behind the sea folk's claim. Why were so many Aes Sedai in Camelin when Tar Valon itself was under siege? She herself was the first answer that came to mind, and that made her more determined to avoid any sister she did not personally know to be a supporter of Egwene. But that would not stop word of the bargain made for aid in using the Bowl of the Winds from spreading, and of the price the tower had been committed to pay for that help. Burn her, but that news would be a bloody wagon load of fireworks going off at once when it became general knowledge among Aes Sedai. Worse, 10 wagon loads. Watching Renila trot away, she fought to steady her emotions and tried to bring the tone back to something approaching civilities. She handles her change in circumstances very well, I think. Shanella gave a dismissive puff. And well she should. Every windfinder knows she will rise and fall many times before her body is given back to the salt. She twisted to gaze after the other seafolk woman, and a touch of malice entered her voice. She seemed to be speaking to herself. She fell from a greater height than most, and she should not have been surprised to find her landing hard after so many fingers she trod on while she was... Her mouth snapped shut, and she jerked her head around to glare at Elaine, at Birgitta, at Avienda and Rena, even at the guardswomen, daring them to comment. Elaine prudently kept her mouth closed, and the light be thanked, so did everyone else. For her part, she thought she almost had her temper smoothed, the desire to cry suppressed, and she did not want to say anything that might start Shanella shouting and undo all her work. For that matter, she could not think of anything to say after hearing that. She doubted it was part of Atha Anmier's custom to take revenge on someone you believed had misused their position above you. It was very human, though. The Windfinder stared her up and down, frowning. "You're wet," she said, as though just noticing. "It is very bad to be wet for long in your condition. You should change your clothes right away." Elaine threw back her head and screamed as loudly as she could, a howl of pure outrage and fury. She screamed until her lungs were empty, leaving her panting. In the silence that followed, everyone stared at her in amazement. Almost everyone. Avienda began laughing so hard she had to lean against a tapestry of mounted hunters confronting a leopard that had turned. She had one arm pressed across the middle as if her ribs hurt. The bond carried amusement, too. Amusement! Though Birgitta's face remained as smooth as a sister's. "I must travel to Tyr," Shanella said breathily after a moment, and as she turned away, without another word or any gesture toward a courtesy. Rena and Rihanna offered curtsies, neither quite meeting Elaine's eye, and pled duties before hurrying off. Elaine stared at Birgitta and Avienda in turn. "If one of you says a single word," she said warningly. Birgitta put on such an expression of innocence that it was palpably false, and the bond carried such mirth that Elaine found herself fighting the urge to laugh. Avienda only laughed the harder. Gathering her skirts and such dignity as she could summon, Elaine set out for her apartments. If she walked faster than before, well, she did want to get out of these damp clothes. That was the only reason. The only reason.